VCY America presents Crosstalk, a nationwide call-in program discussing issues that have an effect on our families, our communities, our churches, our nation, and our world. Crosstalk, an opportunity for you to voice your concerns for biblical principles. And now live by satellite and around the world on the internet at vcyamerica.org. Here is today's Crosstalk.
And thank you for joining us on Crosstalk here on the VCY American Network. My name is Jim Schneider. And just in follow-up to yesterday's Crosstalk and certainly what we're seeing take place in the news today as the government continues to have its slim down and in some efforts, it's unbelievable the amount of effort that's being made to make things miserable for people across the country. We talk certainly about the barricades that were put up outside this outdoor memorial, the World War II memorial here in the United States. But there are a number of legislators. As a matter of fact, I had occasion to call Senator Harry Reid's office this morning, and I was met with this message. Due to government shutdown, we are unable to answer phones, email correspondence, or other constituent services. Now, I'm not sure where he gets that from, because there's a number of Senate offices that are answering phones and hearing from the public and congressional offices. But some have wondered to what extent some are doing this in order to make it miserable as much as possible for the American people. Some have even suggested that they may be hanging a sheet in front of Mount Rushmore to keep people from looking at this national monument. That, of course, is tongue-in-cheek in that regard. But certainly great lengths are being done as this is going on. You can continue to do your best to contact your senators and congressmen on this issue in Washington, D.C. As this is going on in Washington, folks, there are other issues that are going on that you need to know about, issues of concern, issues that are impacting us not only domestically but internationally as well. For instance, did you know that the Iranian president was here in the United States and spoke before the United Nations? Did you know that the new Iranian president, Hassan Rouhani, had a phone conversation with President Obama? In the wake of this, Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is issuing a warning to beware of Rouhani's smile. Don't be fooled. Well, we're going to be taking a look at this today as to what's going on behind the scenes and also some information you need to know about and providing analysis for us today as to the implications of this and the U.S. talking about reaching a new agreement with Iran is David Rubin. David is a former mayor of Shiloh, Israel, in an area much of the world refers to as the West Bank. He's the founder and president of the Shiloh Israel Children's Fund, dedicated to the healing, the trauma of children who have been victims of terrorist attacks, as well as rebuilding the biblical heartland of Israel. He is the author of three books. His latest is Peace for Peace, Israel and the New Middle East. He's also authored The Islamic Tsunami, Israel and America in the Age of Obama. His books, by the way, are available at davidrubinisrael.com. David, thanks for joining us again here today on Crosstalk.
Well, thank you, Jim. It's good to be with you.
Tell us, if you would, about this phone call that happened between Iran's president, Hassan Rouhani, and President Barack Obama. First of all, it just jumps out. I can't recall the last time that there was a phone conversation between the leaders of these two nations. So tell us about this call, when it took place. What do we know about it?
Well, this phone call is the first phone call was the first phone call that has been held between American and Iranian leaders since the Islamic Revolution, since before the Ayatollah Khomeini, and which for those of your listeners who don't know, we're talking about all the way back to the Shah of Iran, who had a generally good relationship with the United States until Jimmy Carter led him astray. So this is what we're talking about. We're talking about a conversation between two leaders who are trying to create a positive public image on something that is not very positive. We're talking about a country, Iran, whose new leader, Hassan Rouhani, is basically an Islamic wolf in sheep's clothing. He is just another in a long line of Islamic wolves in sheep's clothing. He puts on a very nice smile. He speaks a very moderate game. But the fact is that while he is smiling and speaking moderately, the centrifuges are racing full speed ahead towards nuclear power and nuclear bomb in Iran.
David, we keep hearing, though, that Rouhani is a moderate. He's a moderate. And yet you use pretty strong language, Islamic wolf in sheep's clothing, and even Prime Minister Netanyahu is quite skeptical here.
Right. Well, I've been calling him an Islamic wolf in sheep's clothing for a long time. The Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu, when he spoke at the UN, he actually used a similar expression. He called him a wolf in sheep's clothing. He left off the word Islamic. I suppose he felt that would be too controversial. But the fact is that Rouhani is a very deceptive leader, and he uses that old Islamic technique of deception, of taqiyya, it's called in Arabic, deception to further the cause of Islam. And this is something, it's a matter of great concern. I would much rather have a leader in the Islamic world that calls a spade, that tells us exactly what he really thinks when he speaks in English, not just when he speaks in Arabic or Persian. That's what I want. I have no patience for Mahmoud Abbas and Hassan Rouhani, because they tell you one thing in English. They say they speak moderately in English. Then when they speak in Arabic, they tell you what they really think. And sometimes the translation doesn't come across to the American media. But fortunately, we have people in Israel who can do very good translations.
Yeah, I guess there was no doubt as to where Ahmadinejad stood.
Well, he was one of those guys who just said what he thinks.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I think that's better. If you give me two leaders who are calling for my destruction, I want them to call for my destruction in every language possible. I want to know what they think.
Our former UN ambassador John Bolton had published a piece this past Sunday in the Wall Street Journal, indicating that the Iranian president is just playing Obama in order to buy time to build a bomb. Do you think he's overstating the issue, or would you tend to agree with him?
No, I agree with him 100%. There is no doubt. All you have to do is look at what has been going on for the past 15 years or so, and you know they've been working full speed at creating a nuclear bomb. They've invested billions of dollars in this. There is absolutely no question about it. The Israeli intelligence has said time and time again that this is what the Iranians are doing. The CIA doubted us in 2007, and when they came out with their report saying that it doesn't seem that the nuclear program is for military means or for nuclear weapons purposes. And then they later backtracked once the Israeli intelligence pointed out the falsehood of that. I think that we have a big concern on our hands, and it's not just Israel. And I think it's a question for the free world. And, unfortunately, Israel may be the one that's going to have to do something about it. But you should know that at the onset of World War II, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, the American president, was very, very reluctant to get involved. Eventually, he came to the understanding that there was no other way, that war is unpleasant and conflict is unpleasant, but that there was a need to get involved, and that's how we had the big victory in World War II. Sometimes you can have big victories in a very short amount of time. In the Six-Day War in 1967, Israel recaptured its biblical heartland, recaptured Jerusalem, and we did it all in 6 days, and on the seventh day we rested.
Hmm. Let me ask you this, David. What is the authority of Iran's president? Who really calls the shots in that nation? Is it the president or is it Ayatollah Khomeini?
Well, it's always been in the hands of the Ayatollahs. Ever since the Islamic Revolution in 1979, it has always been in the hands of the Ayatollahs. The religious leaders have always ruled the game in Iran. But they usually choose presidents or encourage the election of presidents who are acceptable to them. And Ahmadinejad was acceptable to them. He had an abrasive personality, but he somehow managed to get along with the Ayatollahs because he spoke a similar line. And Rouhani speaks a little bit more moderately when he speaks to the Western world, but he doesn't have different views about the nuclear program any different from the Ayatollahs.
This phone call, a very unusual phone call between the two leaders, I think, to give a perspective as far as dates, I think it goes back into the 1970s, in which the last time the two leaders then of these nations had spoken. Shouldn't we actually go about trying to make peace with our enemies? I mean, wasn't this a good gesture on the part of these two to come together and talk and try to forge peace together?
Only if you have some indication that the enemy is willing to cave in. I think back to Muammar Gaddafi from Libya. You know, Gaddafi did not have any kinship with the United States. There was no friendship. There was no good relationship. But ultimately, he came to understand that it's in his interest to back down, to destroy his weaponry. He had weapons of mass destruction. They were destroyed in a very clear, organized way. And frankly, there was no reason to support the Islamic fundamentalists in Libya who overthrew Gaddafi because his weapons of mass destruction were out of the picture. But that was a special case with Gaddafi. It's certainly not the case with Iran. It's very clear in Iran that almost across the political spectrum, the Iranians are supporting this nuclear weapons program. They've invested billions in it, and they've made it very clear that they're not willing to concede anything on it. I will say one more thing about that, that this program cannot possibly be a program just for peace and peaceful use of energy. And in fact, Obama in his conversation implied that the Americans have no problem with the Iranians having a peaceful nuclear program. But the fact is that it makes no sense at all for them to have a peaceful nuclear program. We're talking about one of the biggest oil exporting countries in the world. So why in the world would they need a peaceful nuclear program? Why would they be investing billions and having it stored in seven different locations around their country, underground, under heavy cement bunkers? It makes absolutely no sense to anyone that has a half a brain in his head.
So you're seeing deception at play here?
The deception is at play. It's been at play for a long time from the Iranians.
David Rubin is our guest here today on Crosstalk. Our topic is Netanyahu's warning, don't be fooled. We'll be back in just 1 minute. This is Crosstalk on the VCY America Network.
Back to Genesis with Dr. John Morris, scientist with the Institute for Creation Research. Dr. Morris, did dinosaurs evolve into birds, as they say?
Chris, this is a favorite evolutionary story. Recently, a fossil dinosaur was found in China that was in an unusual position. It was kind of folded in on itself with the head tucked under one arm. Evolutionists were quick to point out that some birds sleep with their heads tucked under a wing, and so this was proof that dinosaurs evolved into birds. Well, this was nothing of the sort. This wasn't a sleeping animal that just got buried. It was a gasping, drowning animal that was transported to this location and buried in sediments. It's always good to remember that evolutionists like to tell stories. And when they tell stories about fossils recording living positions, it's nothing more than a story. Fossils are where they got buried, not where they died or where they lived. Most were buried by the Great Flood of Noah's day, the one we read about back in Genesis.
This is Chris O'Brien. Thanks for going back to Genesis.
for speaking today with David Rubin. He's live in Israel as we speak and giving analysis to what is taking place here with these discussions now with Iran. We have the phone call made between Barack Obama and the new Iranian president, Hassan Rouhani, as they the first in several decades now. And talking about, hey, we need to have the right to have this peaceful nuclear energy program. He's got a great smile. And the prime minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, says, don't be fooled, U.S. Don't be fooled by that smile. We made reference to Mr. Netanyahu being in our country right now. And he spoke before the U.N. General Assembly. I saw notably absent from that assembly was the delegate from Iran. But we have a clip of what he had, part of what he had to say, and we'll air that, and then David will have you comment on it.
Okay.
Since that time, presidents of Iran have come and gone. Some presidents were considered moderates, others hardliners. But they've all served that same unforgiving creed, that same unforgiving regime. That creed that is espoused and enforced by the real power in Iran, the dictator known as the supreme leader, first Ayatollah Khomeini and now Ayatollah Khamenei. President Rouhani, like the presidents who came before him, is a loyal servant of the regime. He was one of only six candidates the regime permitted to run for office. See, nearly 700 other candidates were rejected. So what made him acceptable? Well, Rouhani headed Iran's Supreme National Security Council from 1989 through 2003. During that time, Iran's henchmen gunned down opposition leaders in a Berlin restaurant. They murdered 85 people at the Jewish Community Center in Buenos Aires. They killed 19 American soldiers by blowing up the Khobar Towers in Saudi Arabia. Are we to believe that Rouhani, the national security advisor of Iran at the time, knew nothing about these attacks? Of course he did.
Your thoughts, David?
Well, it's no surprise. We're talking about a country that is the world leader in international terrorism. The Islamic terrorism that we see throughout the Middle East and throughout the world is being headed by Iran. There, you have on one hand the Shiite Muslims headed by Iran, and you have the Sunni Muslims headed by countries like Saudi Arabia and organizations like the Muslim Brotherhood. So, do you want the Shiite Muslim? Do you want the Sunni Muslim? Terrorism, it doesn't matter which. The fact is that when it comes to the Shiite Muslims, the Iranians are the world leader. They export their terrorism throughout the Islamic world. The first Ayatollah after the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khomeini, called for the exporting of the Islamic Revolution. This is what we have seen from Iran in the past 30 years, 35 years already. And so Rouhani is just an extension of that. He's just another leader in Iran that is exporting the Islamic Revolution outward.
Yeah, it was very interesting because I understand that Mr. Rouhani's speech, he basically talked about them being a peace-loving nation and they're just, you know, victims of terrorism and aggression. And here we have the Prime Minister of Israel saying, you know, don't be fooled. Don't be fooled by the rhetoric that is coming from Rouhani.
Well, as I described before, we've learned in Israel, and you know, we're a country that's smaller than the state of New Jersey. So we're surrounded by countries filled with Islamic terrorists. So can we afford to be fooled? No, we can't afford to be fooled. We have to see through this facade.
Netanyahu's been talking about strengthening the sanctions on Iran. Do you believe sanctions work?
No, I wish I could believe that. I think that pressure can have some effect, but the fact is that as strong as the sanctions have been, and as long as they have been in place, the fact is that the people that have been hurt by the sanctions the most are the average Iranians. If you go into an Iranian supermarket, you may see less food on the shelves. If you look at the bank account of the average Iranian, it's going to be a little bit lower because of the sanctions. But the fact is that there has not been one iota of decrease in the spending on the nuclear program. And if that's what the sanctions are intended to stop or to slow down, they haven't done their job. So I think we need to kind of get away from this illusion that these sanctions are really going to make a difference. And I know it's not politically correct to say it, Jim, and I know it's not popular, and you may have some of the knee-jerk anti-Israeli people calling your station and saying, well, it's warmongering. Well, the fact is that there is no way to stop the Iranian nuclear program other than the military solution. There is only a military solution to this problem, and I am not suggesting that the Iranians are going to be stopped by any sort of threats of military action. Well, what I am saying is that there needs to be a preemptive strike, and I think that Israel is going to have to be the one to do the job.
Has President Obama told Israel, do not attack Iran?
Well, he has. According to the reports that we've gotten from past meetings between Obama and Netanyahu, there were times when Prime Minister Netanyahu said that Israel was preparing for an attack, and President Obama made it very clear that he does not want such an attack to happen. He said, give the sanctions time, give us a chance to do the things that we need to do. And there were other situations going back about a year when Netanyahu was pressuring Obama to sell Israel certain weapons that would be needed to penetrate the heavy concrete bunkers that the Iranians are hiding their nuclear program under, and President Obama refused. So the Prime Minister Netanyahu and President Obama are not going to admit these things publicly, but they have come out in leaks after the meetings, and it seems very clear. And that, you know, you mentioned before my book, The Islamic Tsunami, and the subtitle is Israel and America in the Age of Obama. And we've seen this pattern with Obama ever since he was elected in 2008, and even before. That Israel just is not up there on his list of priorities. He doesn't see the United States-Israel relationship as anything that really needs to be protected. And he's very naive at best about the Islamic world. And, well, I don't want to get into what would be the worst if he's naive at best.
Well, he met with the Prime Minister of Israel, met with President Obama on Monday. He spoke at the UN yesterday. David, do you have any optimism about the outcome of his meeting with President Obama while here in the country?
No, I don't. Look, they obviously, it's important for the two world leaders to talk. You know, Israel and the United States probably have the most at stake in Iranian nuclear program, even though I have to point out that some of the other Arab leaders, the Sunni Muslim countries, are very concerned about this Iranian nuclear bomb. And they have expressed their displeasure with the warm and fuzzy conversation between Rouhani and Obama. They expressed their displeasure towards Obama, towards the United States, for having that conversation. The Saudi leader said that they're not, really not happy. They don't understand why Obama is cozying up to this Iranian leader who wants to destroy all of the countries of the Middle East that are not Shiite Muslim. They just don't understand it.
David, previously we have heard Prime Minister Netanyahu speak of a red line. Do you believe that line's been crossed?
Well, it seems pretty clear that if it hasn't been crossed, then we're just about at that point. And, you know, President Obama has spoken about red lines also, but then when he pronounces red lines, he doesn't cross them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he doesn't follow through on the threats of action that he says he'll take when they're crossed. I'm sorry to say that I don't feel we can rely on this president. And the State of Israel was created in 1948 to rely on itself. That no longer would we be at the whims of the nations of the world, and at this point, when we're really at the precipice here, I would like to see Israel take action, take preemptive action, and put an end to this Iranian nuclear threat once and for all.
We're speaking today with David Rubin, and David is in Israel right now. He's the founder and president of the Shiloh Israel Children's Fund, or there they would say the Shiloh Israel Children's Fund, working with the trauma of children who've been victims of terrorist attack. The website is on that issue is the Shiloh is simply shilohisraelchildren.org, shilohisraelchildren.org. For information about David Rubin's books, including the couple that we've talked about here, Peace for Peace, Israel in the New Middle East, as well as the Islamic Tsunami, those are available at davidrubinisrael.com. I'd like to open our phone lines here today for you to speak with David Rubin as it relates to these current world affairs that are going on, questions pertaining to Iran, and perhaps we'll even broaden that for a bit if you have questions pertaining to measures going on in Egypt right now and Syria, but taking a look at some of those issues and his comments pertaining to the new Iranian president being an Islamic wolf in sheep's clothing, out there to deceive, to further the cause of Islam. Our phone number to Crosstalk is 800-733-9829, 800-733-9829. And in midst of the shutdown that's taken place across the United States, here is a vital issue that is going on right now at the very same time that phone call just took place this past weekend, and the president meeting with the Prime Minister of Israel Monday of this week, meetings going on at the UN at this time. You need to be aware of these things. If you'd like to speak with our guest today on these issues, 800-733-9829. This is Crosstalk.
For a limited time, VCY America is making available Ray Comfort's latest DVD that is causing evolutionists and atheists around the world to become unglued. Evolution vs. God is a fast-moving 35-minute DVD in which Ray Comfort confronts evolutionists with a series of questions that leave them stumped and speechless about a belief system that lacks credible answers to the origins of the earth and mankind. You can obtain one DVD of Evolution vs. God for a donation of $5, 5 copies for a donation of $18, or 10 copies for a donation of $25 by calling 1-800-729-9829. Evolution versus God is shaking the foundation of evolutionary faith. That's one copy for a donation of $5, 5 copies for a donation of $18, or 10 copies for a donation of $25. Simply call VCY America at 1-800-729-9829 or on the web at vcyamerica.org.
You're listening to Crosstalk here on VCY America, vital issues that are taking place in this world, even amidst the shutdown. And the Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu, issuing a warning to the United States, a warning to the world, and that is don't be fooled. Don't be fooled by the new Iranian president, Hassan Rouhani. And there is much that's gone on and transpiring pertaining to this, nuclear aspirations going on in Israel, and even our former U.N. ambassador, John Bolton, saying that all Iran is doing is kind of, you know, playing a game here, biding time in order to put together their nuclear weaponry. And we're talking about these issues today. David Rubin is with us and live from Israel, and we're taking your calls here at Crosstalk. We're going to begin in Fort Scott, Kansas. Tom, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Yeah, Dave, I want to thank your guests for bringing everything up front so we can hear about what's going on in the Middle East, because, you know, we just don't hear it on the news, the truth anyway. Hmm. And I've always been told by an old preacher that keep an eye on Israel. That's God's time clock. Hmm. That's all I have to say.
Thank you, Tom. And let me ask you, David, from what you know about U.S. media, are you satisfied to how they're dealing with this issue, or are you concerned?
Well, I've always felt that the U.S. media is missing the boat when it comes to the Middle East and when it comes to Israel. When they started the so-called Arab Spring, they were calling it the pro-democracy movement in Egypt just a couple of years ago. And as I listened to those reports in the United States, those news reports, I was just seeing visions of Thomas Jefferson and Abraham Lincoln and Martin Luther King up there, all rolled into one. Hmm. As those demonstrators were demonstrating in the streets. The reality is that at least half of those demonstrators were from the Muslim Brotherhood and were Islamic fundamentalists. But nobody would have known it from those reports.
Yeah, yeah. To Washburn, Wisconsin, Bernice, you're on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I remember when President Bush was having quite a time with Saddam Hussein, and they went in looking for nuclear weaponry, and there weren't any found. But I also read a newspaper article that suggested that Saddam had shipped his weaponry over to Iran. That was many years ago. Do you think this happened?
Well, there were weapons of mass destruction that were reported to they were being developed in Iran, in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
Nuclear weapons, we didn't hear too much about because Israel had destroyed the Iraqi nuclear reactor some years prior, and thereby saving the world of that headache. But the fact is I heard the same reports. That a lot of the weapons of mass destruction were transported, because that's what they do. When you announce ahead of time what you're going to be doing, that you're going to be taking out those weapons of mass destruction, then they're going to do everything in their power to protect those weapons of mass destruction from destruction, or they will hide it. In the case of Saddam, supposedly, he hid those weapons of mass destruction. In the case of Iran, they're trying to hide those weapons of mass destruction under heavy concrete bunkers in remote parts of the country. And that's a technique that the Iranians are using. Thank God we know where those weapons of mass destruction, or at least those nuclear projects and programs, are based. And so we have the intelligence that we know where we would need to hit in such a preemptive strike. The question is whether we can do it effectively and quickly. And I suggest, based on everything that I've heard, is that we need to do it quickly, we need to do it powerfully and effectively, and that we would need passive American support. In order to do so, passive American support means not one American soldier going overseas for such an attack, but the Americans helping to sell, helping Israel by selling to Israel whatever weapons are needed to launch such an attack, and at the same time providing political backing.
Hmm. Thank you, Bernice.
Thank you.
Let's go next to Birmingham, England. Robert, you're on the air.
Good evening from England. Good afternoon to you in the USA.
Mm-hmm.
And shalom and shonatova to David. Just
Thank
like
you.
To make a quick comment on some of the situations, because it's encouraging that, for example, Moshe Yaalon is speaking of the need to attack the things in Iran. And it's encouraging that at least you've got somebody in him that seems to understand the situation.
Did you have a specific question here for David?
Well, just basically like David to comment on that. And the other thing that some of the analysts I've been hearing are saying, that the interference that NATO seems to be bent on in Syria, if they topple President Assad, it would open up basically an Iranian-controlled empire from the borders of India right through to the Mediterranean, which would be a seriously big threat against Israel. So just like David to comment on that, please.
Okay. Thank you, Robert.
Okay. Well, first of all, I think that it's clear, it's very clear to me that the Iranians are a destructive force throughout the Middle East and throughout the world. I said that earlier, and I really can't emphasize that enough. Yes, the Assad government in Syria is aligned with the Iranians, and the Iranians have been given their full backing to the Assad government. On the other hand, I think that we have to look at the full picture in Syria. The full picture is that the opposition in Syria is no more friendly to Israel or to the United States or to the Western world than the Assad government is. In fact, it may be less friendly than the Assad government is, if I could say such a thing. The opposition is primarily consisting of, yes, it's a hodgepodge group, but the most organized force in the opposition is Al-Qaeda and the Muslim Brotherhood. Is that really who we want to bring to power in Syria? I don't think so. So I say let those two sides fight it out with each other. And if there is a way to do away with or greatly reduce the chemical weapons program of the Syrians, the chemical weaponry of the Syrians, of the Assad government, well, I think that's a good thing, and it should be encouraged. And Israel has launched a couple of lightning strikes on Syria in order to move in that direction, if we think that it's a threat to us. But I don't see any reason to get directly involved for the long term in that conflict. Let the bad guys beat up on each other. I don't have a problem with that.
Tom in Menominee Falls, Wisconsin, you're on the air.
Yes, I'd like to, of all the groups over in the Middle East, I hear a lot of Sunnis and Shunites.
The Shiites and Sunnis?
Mm-hmm. Yes, and of like the Muslim Brotherhood and all the terrorist groups that David just got done talking about.
Yes.
Is there just like two major groups or four major groups of these kind of people?
Well, if I could explain it in as simple a way as possible, the Sunnis and the Shiites are two the main two Islamic groups. They have some religious differences and certainly ethnic differences and cultural differences, but they all believe in jihad, and they all believe in in fighting and struggling against the infidels, what they call the infidels, They sometimes they're referring to Jews, sometimes they're referring to Christians, always they're referring to non-Muslims. But they have the same basic beliefs, the same basic destructive Islamic violent beliefs. But they have their differences between them, and so in a case like Syria, where you have the Alawites, which is basically an offshoot of the Shiites, who are fighting against the Sunnis, I think we should just let them fight each other. I don't see any reason why American funds or American soldiers certainly should be involved in that struggle, and certainly not Israeli funds or soldiers. I just don't see a reason to get involved there.
And which group does the Muslim Brotherhood fall under?
Muslim Brotherhood is a Sunni Muslim group. They're active in many countries throughout the Middle East. They're one of the best organized and oldest Islamic fundamentalist organizations. They've been in operation since 1928.
Thanks for the question here, Tom. We're going next to Bonnie, calling from Kewaskum. You're on the air, Bonnie.
Hello.
Hi.
Years ago, I remember when they brought the Shah of Iran over here because he had cancer. And they couldn't cure it over there. So they brought him over to America to see if they could help him. I think President Carter was president at that time. But they couldn't cure him over here, and they were really skeptical about that somebody didn't give him something in his food or however they would have, intravenous or whatever. And after that, they just withdrew, and they really got really bad over there. So it was...
Sorry, are you drawing a connection, Bonnie, between those two things?
Right. Otherwise, before that, you didn't hear too much about Iran and...
David, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, the Shah of Iran was a dictator like most dictators in the Islamic world. But the fact is that he was one of the more benevolent ones. He had a good relationship with the West. He had a fairly secret relationship, a positive relationship and cooperative relationship with Israel. And he brought modernity to Iran and a lot of development, economic development to his country. But the fact is that the Islamic fundamentalists were just too strong, and they eventually took over. Jimmy Carter was very wishy-washy about supporting the Shah of Iran, much in the way that President Obama was wishy-washy about supporting Hosni Mubarak in Egypt. And ultimately, he was overthrown by the Muslim Brotherhood. So we've seen that pattern.
Thank you for the call, Bonnie. We're going to take a quick break and come back to the final segment. Our telephone number to Crosstalk, have a couple open lines, 800-733-9829. That's 800-733-9829. You're listening to Crosstalk.
For the Worldview Weekend Minute, I'm Brandon House. Our website's worldviewweekend.com. Does Acts chapter 2, verses 44 to 46 teach socialism? Was the New Testament church there in Acts involved in redistribution of wealth? Because it says, now all who believed were together, had all things in common, and sold their possessions and goods and divided them among all as anyone had need. No, it wasn't teaching socialism. Matthew Henry's concise commentary says the greatness of the event raised them above the world, and the Holy Ghost filled them with such love as made everyone to be to one another as to himself, and so made all things common, not by destroying property, but doing away with selfishness and causing charity. In fact, we also see in the scriptures that they actually had possessions. It says in the scriptures they owned things. They owned houses. They owned land. It was theirs. And in fact, Acts 2:45 says, and sold their possessions and goods and divided them among all as anyone had need. It was theirs, and they would sell it when needed. That's not socialism.
Well, yesterday morning, Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu addressed the 68th session of the United Nations General Assembly at UN headquarters with a warning. Don't be fooled. Don't be fooled by the new Iranian president. He gave some stark warnings pertaining to this. Don't be fooled by the smile. In essence, he is a wolf in sheep's clothing. We're speaking today with David Rubin, former mayor of Shiloh, Israel. We would know this as the West Bank, as much of the world refers to it, but he is the founder and president of the Shiloh Israel Children's Fund, as they help the trauma of children who've been victims of terrorist attack. That website is shilohisraelchildren.org, shilohisraelchildren.org, as well as his own website where his books are available, such as Peace for Peace, Israel in the New Middle East, and The Islamic Tsunami, Israel and America in the Age of Obama. And these are available through his website at davidrubinisrael.com. Taking your phone calls here today at Crosstalk. And our next caller is from Fond du Lac, and it is Kevin. Kevin, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, how you doing today?
Doing well, thank you.
Hey, I got a question concerning the Muslim Brotherhood. I heard a news commentator on one of your Milwaukee stations a couple of weeks ago. They're building all these mosques and that in the States. His claim is that they're doing that to infiltrate the states and the government for some kind of a takeover. Just wondering what his comment would be on that, if we think that'd be possible. Or
David?
Well, this is the basic theme of the Islamic Tsunami. My book, The Islamic Tsunami, Israel and America in the Age of Obama, speaks about the Islamic threat, the very real Islamic threat to Judeo-Christian civilization. And it's not just something that's being carried out in the Middle East. This is a worldwide movement. When the first Ayatollah in Iran, after the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khomeini, said that he wants all Muslims to export the Islamic Revolution around the world, he was talking about the Western world as well. You mentioned the Muslim Brotherhood earlier about the Sunni Muslims. The Muslim Brotherhood calls for a jihadist process to destroy and eliminate the Western civilization from within. That's a quote from the Muslim Brotherhood. So how do you destroy a civilization from within? You infiltrate it with people. You demographically try to influence the society. You try to spread Sharia law, that destructive Islamic law that says that all non-Muslims are inferior, that says that it's okay to beat your wife, that says it's okay to have four wives plus any number of wives that your right hand possesses. That's also a quote from the Quran. We're talking about a very, very destructive ideology that is seeking to spread its will throughout the world. And it's not an accident that there are mosques going up in cities all over the United States. It's not an accident that there are Islamic charter schools being set up, supported by not just taxpayer money in the United States, but also by Persian Gulf countries that are trying to spread their evil around the world.
Thanks for the question here. And by the way, we understand that there's a name change going on right now with CARE 2, the Council on American Islamic Relations. And soon they're starting to go by the name now of WTF, which is Washington Trust Foundation. Trust. Kind of interesting in light of the things we've talked about here, David.
Yeah, I don't think it could be trusted one bit.
Let's go to, Dan. He's been holding the longest in Wisconsin. You're on the air, Dan.
Yes. My question is about Ahmadinejad. He has said in the past that the end of his presidency would usher in the 12th imam. I was wondering, what do the Islamic people think about this? Do you think that he's on the stage, you know, now?
Well, Ahmadinejad is off the stage now. He's no longer the president of Iran, and Rouhani is in charge. But Rouhani is just another Islamic ideologue. He talks a softer game. You won't hear too much in English about this theology that you're referring to.
Mm-hmm.
You won't hear it that much from Rouhani. Ahmadinejad just kind of let it all hang out, said what he thought. He was kind of akin to the Hamas terrorists who were based in certain parts of Israel. The terrorists, the real terrorists, say what they think. And here and there you have those who are terrorists in Arabic and they're peacemakers in English. Those are the ones that you have to really watch out for.
Thank you, Dan. We're going to squeeze in one last call. Dale from Port Huron, Michigan, you're on the air.
Yeah, I had a question for David. Israel said if they were ever attacked by Iran, that one of their first targets would be Damascus. And would that be a fulfillment of Isaiah 17? I'll wait to hear from David, and I'll hang up. Thanks.
Okay, I'm not sure who he's quoting in Israel, but I don't want to get to the point where Iran is able to attack us, and then we have to respond.
Hmm.
I don't think any Israeli leader would want it to get to that point or would let it get to that point. Now, what'll happen to Damascus? I mean, I'm familiar with that prophecy about Damascus being destroyed. And I think that we're seeing Damascus getting destroyed pretty badly right now.
Hmm.
But they're doing it to themselves in their civil war.
Thank you, Dale. Appreciate your call there. David Rubin, live from Israel. We've got about 20 seconds left. Give a final thought here with our listeners, if you would.
Well, all that I can say is just beware of that Islamic tsunami. It is not something that can be trusted. Okay, it's out to destroy Western civilization.
Hmm. David Rubin, thank you so much for staying up later tonight in Israel to join us here on Crosstalk.
Thank you.
And folks, again, those websites, davidrubinisrael.com, davidrubinisrael.com, and shilohisraelchildren.org. Thanks for joining us today on Crosstalk.
You've been listening to Crosstalk via satellite and the internet from VCY America. Views expressed may or may not be those of this station. For a CD of today's program, send a donation of $6 or more to VCY Tape Ministry, 3434 West Kilbourne Avenue, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53208, or download by RSS or podcast from crosstalkamerica.com. And join us again for Crosstalk.